In the Thick of It, a Profit and Loss podcast with Colin Lambert and Galen Stobbs.
Hello and welcome to In the Thick of It, our weekly podcast. My name is Galen Stobbs. I'm the editor of Profit and Loss. And with me, as always, is Colin Lambert, the managing editor of Profit and Loss. And we'll be commenting, grumbling, opining, and generally discussing some of the news items we've seen this week that have caught our eye. So, Colin, to kick us off, what's kind of the big news that you've kind of been looking at this week?
England won a penalty shootout. Did anything else happen?
Yeah, I know, right? It's hard to focus after that one on anything.
I must confess, I'm still in Johannesburg, and it was quite hard for me to focus that night, at the end of that night, and not only for the football. I guess, away from the World Cup, which is kind of dominating things because it's quite brilliant. The thing that struck me, I said, we had the next latest round of platform volumes. And obviously we had the drop month on month, but year on year, they're actually looking fairly healthy, aren't they?
Yeah, no, they are. Is it a case you think of, you know, sell in May and go away? Is that what's happening here?
Could be. It could be. I mean, I think it's event-driven market. I think the market maybe got very excited about the trade wars in May and is now just sort of waiting for the reality. And that was what was happening in June because, you know, it's quite interesting. You know, the tariffs were slapped on China. I guess it was last night your time, and the markets haven't really reacted to it. So it could well be that. I mean, I think it's just part of a natural cycle. I mean, I look at the way, you know, the platforms are going over the sort of last year, and to me, probably the two standouts would be FX SpotStream, which I think is, you know, is still in growth phase to a degree, but I think we've got to acknowledge now that it's, you know, more than 2 years into, you know, into sort of since it was hitting around the 15-yard mark and started publishing volumes. So they're sort of more mature. And I think the other one is CBOE, Hotspot. Their numbers continue to impress me year on year. So I think they're the two sort of standouts. The rest of them, they're kind of just up and down. And there's not really much pattern to it. What I did want to point out, though, was I think if you look at the numbers for Deutsche Börse FX, now they're a bit slow in updating. I think them and Thomson Reuters are still to report June data. But if you look at the Deutsche Börse numbers for the first 5 months of the year, it kind of gives an insight into why they bought GAIN and why they may actually still be out there looking for somebody else. Because I was just running some numbers. First 5 months of 2018 compared to the same 5 months in 2017, Deutsche Börse's FX volume was up 6.2%. Healthy growth, you'd look at it on that scale. Next market's up 17.4%, CME up 22.2%, Hotspot up 42.2% over the same period. Thomson Reuters spot up 20% over the same period. Thomson Reuters other volumes, so the NDFs, forwards and swaps, up 26.3%. So it's quite interesting to me, like looking at that, I would say 360T and or Deutsche Börse's FX in general was underperforming the market year on year, which we haven't seen a lot of this year, have we?
No. So when you talk about Deutsche Börse, what are those figures including? Is that the Eurex futures, which I know aren't that big, and 360T?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think, you know, it's 360T, pretty much.
Okay.
And the numbers, I think, are roughly around where everyone thought they were when they weren't published. You know, they were doing between sort of, you know, most people thought between 50 and 60 yards. You get a bit of a boost every now and again. And I think, yeah, generally speaking, we're talking 360T numbers. And as we said, when the deal for GAIN GTX was on the table, you know, this kind of reflects the fact that, you know, 360T have always struggled in spot. They do some business. You know, they've got some loyal corporate customers, but generally speaking, it's the other product volume that sort of, you know, they're mainly known for. And of course, those numbers were actually fairly stable. And I think this sort of data looks at it. You know, 6.2% is good growth, but if you put it in comparison to others, and I deliberately didn't look at FX SpotStream or Fastmatch because obviously, you know, I do look at them as still being in a growth phase. But, you know, I guess if you're looking at it, in sort of, you know, very general terms, I reckon Spotstream was probably up 40%, and Fastmax was probably up something like 30% in that time. So, yeah, I think that kind of gives an insight into what, yeah, maybe Deutsche Börse saying, well, okay, how do we kickstart this business? Because there's a lot of people out there now talking to me about platforms becoming the go-to venue.
Okay.
And it was interesting this week in Johannesburg. We had last week we had African Central Bankers. This week we had African Commercial Bankers. RMB Group were sort of bringing their customers and some of their regional offices in. And these guys were talking a lot more about using multi-dealer platforms. Yes, the single dealer platform is there and they're using that, but they're actually talking more about, you know, the 360Ts and the FXalls and so on, and Bloomberg FX Go. So there's clearly sort of some sort of demand out there, and I just wonder whether 360T would, or Deutsche Börse were thinking, we might be in danger of missing the boat here, and that's why they went for Gain, when in reality they probably could have gone for somebody else.
Interesting. And speaking of platforms, when you talked about CBOE, their kind of FX growth via what used to be kind of just a hotspot, and it's interesting because talking to them, they, when you kind of ask them about why they've had kind of consistent gains in their volumes and seem to be publishing some good numbers these days, they very much attribute it to their kind of the data analytics they're doing around matching these days, which is, they're kind of trying to move away from this, the traditional broker model, right, which is the more trades I can match, the better, because volume equals revenue for me, basically. And they've been trying to kind of get away from that idea slightly to really drill into data analytics and analyzing how they match people and who they're matching people. In terms of, we talk about unique liquidity is a phrase that I kind of dislike in a lot of ways. Because
oh, you kind of dislike it.
Yeah, I know. I rant about it a lot.
I detest it.
But I think kind of, I mean, you can get into it. The liquidity isn't unique, but you can customize it and personalize it. It's perhaps more accurate, right? It's not unique. The liquidity could settle. Perhaps you can change how it's presented or the way it's presented. But very much the hire of John Weinberg as the head of FX liquidity analysis, I know, was very important for them in this regard. He's based in London. And I think it's been interesting that they seem very sure that rather than just, you know, happy coincidence or like an uplift in the market, but this kind of more targeted analytical way of matching up different people and different liquidity flows to the right people is why they've seen this boost. And I think also that's kind of symptomatic of a broader trend that we've written about, of just firms in general becoming much, much more savvy about A, the value of data, and B, how they use the data that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the key to it now is, I mean, this is basic to me manifestation of the trend that we've been seeing for a couple of years, whereby LPs are stepping away from truly anonymous platforms to a degree. What they're looking for is, okay, well, I don't know who it is I might be dealing with in, but I know that, you know, this platform has matched me up with this type of client. And so you get this sort of trading behavior, you get more confidence in the liquidity pool when, you know, you know what sort of behaviors are going to be in that unique pool. And I guess it's also the fact that, you know, they're holding the LPs to account as well. You know, if you're an externalizer, the client in the liquidity pool is going to say, well, you know what, actually, we don't want these guys in here. It's just this whole move towards sort of, you know, bespoke liquidity pools. And I think that's something we'll see a lot more.
Yeah, holding the LPs to account was another point, actually, that when I spoke to CBOE FX, that they were kind of keen to make. You know, not just the reject rates, but that was another thing they made a big point of, though they declined to give kind of exact figures because that's kind of part of their setup. But, yeah, as you said, there's definitely much more accountability for LPs. One thing I wanted to ask you while we're talking about volumes, though, is that the Fast Match tape, right, there were kind of some people who liked the idea. There was a lot of skeptics in the market. We've kind of covered the kind of the challenges, but also why it could be a good idea kind of extensively in the magazine. But, I mean, this year so far, you know, they'd had pretty great growth, right, until last month. Volumes increased 28%, 61%, 37.5%. And to the point, you know, they were up to, in May, they had 75.8 billion go through the tape, which is, you know, you can continue that trajectory. Once you get to like 100 yards, that's kind of fairly substantial, I'd say, right?
Yeah. Well, let's face it, it puts them on a par data-wise with EBS and CME and Reuters.
Right. Exactly, right? And the whole thing about the tape was it has to get critical mass fairly quickly, or it will kind of dwindle. But last month, it dipped down, this kind of momentum that it seemed to build up, dipped down to 69 billion. And now this is still like significantly up from 55 billion in May. But to your mind, is this symptomatic of the broader slowdown we've seen amongst platforms, or is this kind of an actual a loss of momentum for the tape potentially?
Well, I think it's basically hit a natural equilibrium for the moment. The people have been posting to the tape. I think, you know, the growth was as people sort of, you know, connected and actually managed to stream their data through. I think what we're seeing now is, I mean, if you look at it, I guess that's in terms of like month on month, if you take out, say, SpotStream, who had a new record. But generally speaking, I think the decline was probably around, I don't know, sort of 8 to 10%, which is broadly in line with what most of the platforms saw their volumes go down last month, you know, month on month. So to my mind, I sort of look at it and think, this indicates to me that it's hit a natural equilibrium for now, and the next growth spurt that we see in the tape, if we see it at all, will have to come from another venue connecting up. So it looks to me as though what they've got is, okay, we've got data coming from these, you know, dealers or venues, and that's hit this 75.8 yards, which is, you know, an impressive number in such a short time. But now what's happening is, well, they're really, you know, it's really, I guess, driven by the platforms themselves. So I think their next growth has to come through adding another venue or new participants. I don't know what their pipeline's like, but, you know, I guess if you're looking at 70 yards a day, that's valuable data. I think it just comes down to the type of clients that are actually providing the data, quite frankly.
Okay. Moving on from platform volumes, something else that caught my eye was obviously the crypto news of the week, which obviously they have to see something every week, which was BestX is expanding its analytics suite to include digital currencies, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ripple, and Ether.
Yeah. Thoughts? My thoughts are, I guess this is more your space than mine, but I look at it and think, you know, they're connected up. If they're connected up to the venues and getting the data, then this is something that will come at some stage. The only thing is Bitcoin still largely retail? If it is, then the retail traders really care about TCA. This could be sort of, you know, I guess preparing for the institutionalization of cryptocurrencies, you know, trading.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they, I mean, someone's got to go first. And then, you know,
true.
I'm
a little skeptical that there's that much really kind of effective that can be done right at this second. That being said, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people who are building out solutions in this space, and they've all said that one of the things they really want, you know, once they get, say, the custody piece or the credit piece or whatever piece that they're focused on at the moment, once they get that rolled out, the next thing they want to focus on is TCA solutions. In fact, OTCXM, when they bought Og Trading, they were talking about, you know, they could look for further acquisitions, and one of the things that they would consider would be some kind of TCA solution or service that they can then roll out in addition to everything else. So the people are definitely eyeing it and looking at it. I was talking in phrases before that we don't like. There was a phrase that I liked in the press release, which of course means I don't actually like it. They are by doing this, they continue to future-proof our offer. Future-proof.
Yeah.
I feel like that's very much PR speak for, we're not really sure, we're hedging our bets.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think, I suppose it's, I'd be interested in who was driving it, because I don't really see much demand for crypto TCA. But then I guess if I'm someone that has an interest in getting institutions trading crypto, then the first thing these institutions are going to want to know is, I don't want to be ripped off. And
yeah,
the way you can allegedly prove you're not being ripped off, because obviously, you know, there's lies, damn lies and statistics, but the TCA is a way of actually sort of turning and saying, okay, you know what, I did this execution, I can show that my investors that I didn't get ripped off on it. So I guess those that are offering or trying to get the institutions into crypto would probably welcome it. From a personal point of view, you know, I know the Best Dex guys pretty well. Their pre-trade TCA product is really outstanding. I can't wait to see the pre-trade TCA on crypto if it's based on last year. You know. You're about to buy 5 Bitcoin. The price will move $1,000. It could be absolutely crazy. But yeah, this is a developing space. We're still very, very young when it comes to crypto. So therefore, I think it's inevitable that people can say, well, okay, let's, you know, what do we use in the fiat world that the crypto world probably needs? And maybe this is one of those services. I don't think there's a lot. I mean, to be honest, if you're looking at it in terms of tech and, you know, marketing and creating a market structure, the crypto industry has done a good job. But maybe this is just, you know, a play for the institutional business when it comes out.
Your comment on kind of institutional retail was echoed by a Twitter reply to one of our tweets about this, which literally said, when we said about launching kind of TCA for cryptos, interested how you do that without any real institutional crypto prices unless you rely on flaky futures.
You know what, it could be they're just sitting there going, we think the future is going to be, you know, this stuff is going to expand in the future, and they want to be ready for it. Guess that kind of justifies the future-proof thing. But, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think we could become a bit cynical over PR speak over the years, don't we? But just a little bit. But maybe this is just a play for that business. I don't know. The other thing that's making a comeback, one of my favourite phrases, in other words, it's not, is I'm seeing more use of the phrase digitalisation. I think a couple of weeks ago, Barclays were digitalising their EFX business. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, EFX, surely that's digital. And then this week, you wrote a report on the sort of attitude of corporate treasurers to FX risk. And at the bottom of that report, it mentioned, oh, you know, digitalisation of the corporate treasury is going to be the future. Well, digitalisation is automation to me, unless I'm missing something here. And most corporate treasuries are automated. So, I guess it's just more PR speak. That report I found quite interesting, though, that you put out there, because I think I think it was like 57% of corporate treasurers, CFOs, weren't confident they had the correct skill set to appropriately hedge their FX risk or trade FX. To my mind, corporates are there to build cars, make computers, whatever else they do. They're not there to trade FX. This is why we have a banking industry, so they can actually, you know, hedge their risks and risk, transfer their risks to somebody who can hold it. And I wonder if, you know, this sort of the questions they were being asked, they're trying to prepare the corporate world for the fact that, guess what, you've got to become professional FX traders. If we allow that to happen, quite frankly, I mean, there's always been a few corporates that trade professionally. I work for one of them. But the fact remains, if we get to the stage where we're trying to say the corporates, well, you know, sorry, we can't really affect your risk transfer, not wanting to take this, then quite the FX industry has lost the plot if we get to that stage. This is the core function of the market.
Oh, one of the kind of ironies of the corporate spaces as well, right? When it comes to FX hedging, the very biggest players who actually do have, like, almost like professional trading teams, you know, you walk in and it's screens everywhere and they're very, very savvy, right? If they have an FX hedging problem, they have all the banks in the world tripping over themselves to try and service and help them. And yet if you're kind of a mid-tier, sounds low to mid-tier corporate, you're probably not getting the FX service you'd really like and you don't have the capability for it. I was surprised to hear 70% of CFOs basically saying that they suffered losses in the last 2 years or reduced earnings rather due to avoidable unhedged risk. Like, I know that the treasurers aren't FX traders, but it's still their job to manage that risk. And you think, like, it doesn't take too much to call up a bank and work out some kind of hedging strategy for your FX risk.
No, I mean, what we're talking about here is accounting. And accounting is basically simple. I have this requirement for this amount of currency on this day, and this is what my accounts are based in. This is how I'm going to pay for it. You know, generally speaking, what your requirements are going to be, and a simple spreadsheet can work it out. But there are dozens of banks out there with solutions. There are dozens of fintechs out there with solutions. All this is cash management. And I'm wondering why we're trying to make it more complicated for the corporates and why they're trying to make it more complicated for themselves. Is this best execution requirements gone crazy? I'm not sure. But ultimately, I look at it and say, well, unhedged FX risk. Well, you know what your flows are to a degree. I mean, there's always going to be a variation around the flows, but you generally know what your flows are going to be. Why not just hedge them systematically? There's plenty of great solutions for it. So I'm a bit mystified by that one as well. Okay, so you're complaining about losing money through unhedged risks. Guess what? If you actually just did your job properly, you wouldn't have to worry about it.
True. On the digitization thing, I was just thinking, which is, do you remember when we were doing the demos in London in February, which we then turned into our annual Eye on the Client EFX Awards? There was one bank we went and saw where they talked about digitization, whether it's kind of something you either need to turn into a weapon or you let it kind of destroy your business. I mean, is that a little dramatic? Is that what firms are trying to do, like the Barclays now trying to turn, quote-unquote, digitization into a weapon?
Maybe, but to me, the weapon is data. It's not digitalization. What is digitalization? Ultimately, it is, to me, is automation, isn't it? It is effectively, I guess it's sort of, I think the way it's being used here is it's more data-driven decision-making. But quite frankly, if you go back 15 years, the banks were streaming or would create a request for quote price in most currency pairs based off data they receive from EBS or Reuters matching. That's become more complex as more platforms have launched over the years. But generally speaking, I just wonder if they're sitting there going, oh, how can we reinvent the wheel and make it sound interesting? I know, let's digitalise our business. Where I'm looking at it going like, well, I don't know, fellas. Frankly, I thought you were digitalised years ago when you rolled out an EFX platform and you've enhanced it every year. We are happy to hear from any listeners or readers that can tell us why digitalization is actually something completely different to anything we've seen before, because quite frankly, I think all we're doing here is going like round in circles and, oh, okay, look, I've got a new word for it. So maybe we'll see. And I guess that brings me to something else actually I just wanted to cover. It's in a retail space mainly. CMC Markets rolled it out. They did a couple of announcements last week, but the one that sort of tweaked my antenna was the voice control. They're using an Amazon's Alexa for.
Yeah.
And of course, anyone listening to this in on a loudspeaker has now had the thing in the corner go bing. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess that is an interesting idea. In the past, it would have been totally impossible because you're sitting and there's too much background noise. But I guess now, when you got into quieter dealing rooms, I wonder how effective voice control will be, because it's going to be slower, I would say, than the machine trading, because you've actually got to say the word Alexa. But I think there's some really interesting ideas coming out of this, maybe around the analytics and analysing the data.
And see, if you I'm can not, actually sort of get, you know, I'm not sure it will be necessarily slower, right? Because I've actually thought about this when we've gone and looked at different platforms, right? I wouldn't have wondered if we were actually coming full circle and end up almost going back to a kind of form of voice execution, right? Because for me to tell a computer, like, okay, I need to trade, you know, like $1 million, like this is the price I want, this is where I want my stop, etc., it's going to be quicker for me just to say it than like, you know, click, like round this out, click. You know, for the more kind of point and click style trading, or even just like if it's a corporate, right? You say it in, have it, and then the screen comes up, and I get to just review it, and then okay, that all looks right, click OK. Rather than, because when we go, for example, and see the corporate, they try and make it as kind of simple and foolproof as possible, because you know they don't want a fat finger error or anything. Just be able to say that into a headset or whatever, then have it appear on the screen and just click OK, is ultimately, I think, going to be quicker than having to click and type and move and point. So I wonder if we don't end up back at a form of voice trading, ironically enough.
We could do. I mean, I think if you sort of look at some of the spot traders of the past, they've really quick hands on the keyboards. And you look at what Morgan Stanley did with their physical keyboard, where you actually can preload like strategies into a function key, and literally you hit one button and it executes a pre-arranged strategy for you. I mean, I guess the jury's out on voice control, because you know. Foreign exchange traders can be a little bit random sometimes. So I think probably what we'll do, we'll tiptoe, he says surprisingly, you'll tiptoe into this probably through using data and analytics and, you know, Alexa, show me this sort of euro dollar chart for the last 5 hours, and maybe show me this piece of data around it. But to get to the trading piece, I think the very fact that people want to have more control around their trading, this, I'm not sure, you know, they may have to say too many things to actually sort of get the, you know, Alexa or FX, we should call it FXer actually, shouldn't we?
trademark that now, Colin.
Trademark, bang. Anyone tries copying that, I'm going to have them, yeah. Yeah, FXer, you know, sell 5 million euro dollar spot. I think you're going to have to come out with things like that, which, you know, it'd be interesting. Yeah, I mean, you could be right. It could sort of, you know, replace the human. I'm not sure it will. But the sort of manual trader, I'm not sure it will. Yeah. But it'll be one to watch. And, you know, kudos to the retail FX space. So I have to say, over the years, they've caused some sort of degree of angst in the FX market. But there are a lot of interesting ideas over there that do sort of, you know, do come out of the retail space. Sorry, someone's having a burn up outside my hotel room.
No worries.
So yeah, I think there are sort of, you know, things that come out of that retail space that will feed into institutional, and they're to be credited for it. So we will wait and see. I think we're pretty much done now. So I guess there's only one thing left for me to do as a loyal Englishman. And I think after the failure of Colombia last week, my tip for the World Cup's in Colombia, I incidentally also very confidently predicted a 0-0 draw between Denmark and Croatia, and it was 1-1 after 4 minutes. So that went well as well. But I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to close that gallon with me predicting Sweden to win the World Cup. It's going to have to be done.
Your choices are sailing on
merrily. Mine are falling. I'm just going to put a hex, and my apologies to my Swedish friends out there, but you know it has to be done. Sweden to win the World Cup.
I'm kind of regretting we didn't put some money on this at the start.
Well, I'm glad I didn't. Actually, I've got to be honest, I did have a cheeky $10 on Germany at the start of the World Cup, so that's already gone. So there you go. It's shows how much I know about it. So okay, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Thanks very much for downloading the podcast. Tell your friends about it and family, and hopefully it's a good entertaining listen on the train or bus in the morning. We'll be back next week, and we'll speak to you then. Thanks for listening.